Welcome to 21. My name is Drew Lasker. I'm a proud father, husband, son, professional basketball player, lifelong athlete, and business owner of Train Harder 21. I have partnered with Yvonne Harris to create this podcast that will explore the life and lessons that come along with being an athlete while continuing to inspire athletes at all levels to achieve optimal performance. Why 21, you might ask? It is my jersey number and has been a part of my good fortune and great career. So it seems like a fitting name for this podcast.
Hi, everyone. This is Yvonne Harris. I'm fortunate to experience firsthand how Drew's expertise and care for his clients have a positive, measurable impact on athletes. And not just from the perspective of physical ability. Drew helps his clients to transform their mental game, which is just as important, if not more important, than the physical game. He also equips his student athletes with the knowledge to think beyond just playing sports and how to leverage sports to create a successful life and career. Drew is living proof that the journey won't always be easy, but with grit and an openness to the possibilities, the outcome will be better than you know. Enjoy this episode of 21.
Welcome back to 21, and I'm really excited to share the story of today's guest as he represents the true underdog story. So listen as he shares his climb from humble beginnings in New York City to making it out and earning himself a college education and becoming a professional basketball player. Unfortunately, that dream was short-lived as he got cut and landed himself into a player coach job, becoming the most successful coach in British basketball history, which ultimately landed him a job in the NBA. Today, we welcome MBE Fabulous Flournoy. Fab, my man, my brother, welcome to 21.
What's up, Drew and everybody? Happy to be here on a 21 show. I think it's a long time coming. Me and you have often talked a lot, many of times over many of conversations, and at some point in time we discussed about putting a lot out there, just information. First of all, with your intro, I'm gonna pull that back a little bit. Just, we gotta put some respect on Cato's name a little bit. So, you know, Kevin Cato with
him. Of course. RIP to Kevin.
We did a lot, and I think there's a lot of coaches within our league that we got to put a little respect on their names, especially within the BBL, or the league in which obviously I've spent all of my career in as coaches and also as a player. This has been a long time coming, and I was successful, but not as successful as I would have liked to have been.
Well, Fab, we're glad you're here today and willing to share your journey. And you have been very successful, and your success is now sowing seeds into the success of others. So we thank you for that.
I appreciate that. Let me pull back for the second time. Let me put some respect on your name, Yvonne, because I said hello to Drew Lasker and I didn't say hello. We're going to do it. You know me. We're going to do it right. My apologies on that part, but I'm happy to be a part of the show. And, you know, I probably got a little bit too excited in the beginning. Just, you know, it's been a long time. Well, not a long time, but I haven't been able to converse with my brother, Drew, in a long time. And, you know, I'm so happy for you and, you know, what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish and what you will do, and shedding a little bit of light on basketball. And more so like the real stories and, you know, in getting out.
Fab, let us focus on you today and take us back to the beginning. When did you start playing basketball?
I started playing at a late age, where I started playing significant, when I decided I was going to be serious or that I wanted. And it was probably around when I was maybe about 14, 15 years old, maybe 13, somewhere in there, where, you know, I dabbled in it a little bit, but not really played. And I had a unique, you know, situation where I got into it by default. And, you know, I was in New York and I got into it because I just wanted a pair of sneakers and we simply couldn't afford, you know, it was, I believe at the time it was Delta Force and Adidas and Converse and, you know, the weapons. They were called Larry Bird, and he had the yellow one. I mean, Larry Bird had the green ones.
Yeah.
Celtics and Magic had the purple ones. And obviously Converse had just changed over from going from Chuck Taylor's, and Converse was, believe it or not, was the ringleader of basketball shoes. And at that point in time, you know, I believe Reebok was just coming along, not as a basketball shoe, but like more as a tennis shoe. And at that time, growing up, it was shell top Adidas, because that was, you know, Run DMC, going back and that. And it was just, again, it was, I could not afford any of those sneakers and any of those shoes. And I remember, you know, just want to more or less just fit in, because you have to remember, as we see it now, how things are now with sneakers or trainers, as you say in England, or kicks or boots, whatever you want to call it, it's a phenomenon. People, you know, making real money off of it, and you know, and you know, it's a lifestyle. It's, you know, it's, you know, it's a career. And that, for me, at that point in time, the sneaker game wasn't a game. It was just more or less of a status symbol and a way to fit in. And just like every other kid, I wanted to fit in. And, you know, you're talking about at that point in time, shoes was like $20 and $40, $45 and $35 US. Now you're talking about they $200, $300, $500, and, you know, $45, $35 is a lot of money. We couldn't afford that. And my mom used to go to Tom McCann. It was this shoe store, and it's, you know, and if you go back far enough, you'll know Tom McCann.
I remember Tom McCann.
And you remember Tom McCann and Buster Brown, those shoe chains. And, you know, you would have, you know, sneakers at that point in time, they had like the imitation brand, and they was like off the table. And, you know, you could get like two or three pair for like about $10 for three pair. And that's what my mom did, which obviously growing up as a kid, it was all right. But then when you start getting into your teens and you start wanting to be popular, you want to fit in, you want to have everything that everybody else had. And I didn't have those things. And obviously, I saw one of my friends, and, you know, he had these sneakers on. And when I was trying to figure out how could he afford those sneakers, because, you know, well, if I walk it back a little bit, you know, I come from New York in the projects, and I grew up mainly in the projects. But before we moved into the projects, we did a lot of moving around. So as a kid, I never been to the same, like I never was in a school longer than 2 years. Within 2 years, I moved school. I mean, I was in a different district because we was moving around. My mother was trying to make a living. She, you know, she struggled, and she raising her kids by herself. And, you know, we was, you know, kicked out of one place, found a job. So within 2 years, I was never in a school longer than 2 years. So I don't have friends that date back to when I was a kid, or from when I know, or wherever, you know, because if I walk it back again, and I've got to watch my walk backs, because I'm walking back a lot. I went to, you have a preschool, a kindergarten, right? So I went to preschool, I went to one school. Then when I got into kindergarten, I went to a different school. Then from kindergarten to like second and third grade was a different school. Third and fourth grade was a different school. Fifth and sixth grade was a different school. And then when I got to seventh and eighth grade was a different school. So by the time I got to high school, I've been to like five, six different schools, all in different areas of the Bronx. So all we pretty much had was each other, was my mother, my brothers, and my sister. So I didn't have that, you know, get into sports, or had time to get into a team, or had time to, you know, figure it out. Because at every juncture, I was always the new kid. I was always trying to fit in. I was always, you know, in the lunchroom sitting by myself. It was always almost to the point where I created my own imagination and my own thoughts within my head of who I was, and, you know, had the, you know, the thing of growing up again as who was my father and, you know, where was he? And he was this and he's going to come and give me all these sneakers. And, you know, so I had all that going in the background as to how I fell into basketball by default. So if I bring us forward a little bit, we didn't have those things. So now all of a sudden I'm in high school and I want to fit in, and I meet up with a couple of my friends, and they all had the same sneakers on. And when I say I meet up with all my friends, I meet up with the people who I wanted to be my friends. You know what I mean? The people that was, you know, that was hanging out. And I never had an opportunity to get involved. I was on the fringes of everything. So I never had an opportunity to get involved in something good. I never had an opportunity to get involved in something bad. If I did get involved in something bad, it wasn't long before we were on our way moving, where we were moving into a different neighborhood. Sorry for making this a long story, but I'm just trying to put everything into place because it comes back in the end. So they all had on the same sneakers, and I'm looking at them and I'm looking at my feet, and I had on a pair of sneakers, and they were called Wild Style. There was a no name off the top. They were a knockoff brand of Adidas. And I remember that when I was walking, I used to drag my feet. Part of the reason why I used to drag my feet is because my sneakers had holes in the bottom of them. And then if you dry your feet, then obviously sometimes my socks didn't have, you know, we didn't have the socks that we have today where it has the elastic. We had the 3-tube and it was long and they come all the way up with the, not the 3-tube, the three colors, the three stripes was blue, yellow, or was red. It was blue, red, and blue, or blue, yellow, yes, and white. Those yes, three stripes that go all the way up. And obviously those are the ones that you used to wear with your Chuck Taylors at the same time, and you know, all Pro Kids or events or all those type of things. Now, when obviously those shoes weren't necessarily, they were basketball shoes, but not the basketball shoes that we, as we know now, they were that thick sole, and you used to do everything in those shoes, and eventually it would run down, you know, that rubber, and when it run down, it had a hole in it. And again, I had those long socks, so those socks used to slip down and come out of the hole or the bottom of my shoe. And then obviously everybody would know. And then, you know, you can hear people laughing at you when you're walking past them because, you know, you're walking, and when you walk, if someone walk behind you, lift up your feet, they, you know, they can see, they can see it. So I was doing everything in my power to try and hide that, or try and pull up the socks, and, you know, and it got to a point where, you know, as a little kid, I went through the stage where I was resentful of my mother, resentful of my father, like, why I can't have sneakers like everybody else? Why are you never around? My mom was working two jobs and trying to go back to school and get her GED. You know, she was working in a nursing home as custodial, cleaning floors, sweeping floors, and you know, mopping up toilets, picking up bile and whatever. You know, she was just doing whatever it was. Then going to work at a bank, you know, cleaning the bank up as well while going to school. So my mother wasn't necessarily around as much as she took, or when she was, she turned around and she, you know, she would cook and my mom would be gone all day. So we was just there, you know, and figuring out. So when I say figuring out, just being out there, being kids and trying to figure out. So again, I'm growing up resentful because I'm looking at other kids and I'm looking at like what they had, and we ain't got that, and my mom's is busting her tail, you know, to try and pay the rent, and if the rent ain't due, she can't pay it. We getting evicted. She has to find someplace else to live for us and whatever. So I got all these things going on. I ain't got no true friends. I ain't got no this. So I'm a true introvert by necessity, if that makes sense, but also within the environment. And obviously the New York that everyone see and hear about now wasn't New York that I grew up in and where it was at for me. And it was tough, and it still is tough. Again, just want to fit in. So when I come across my friends at that point in time, projects, and I'm looking at them with all the sneakers and they got the track suits. And at that point in time, they had the neon track suits. the shell suit ones, the one that, you know, when you walk and you have to, when the legs is walking out, and it was neon green and all that. Yeah, those, the real bright ones. And again, growing up in New York, that was it, you know, because you had the cardboard boxes that you used to break dance, and you had the shell suits on it to help you spin better, you know. So obviously I wanted to be that. I wanted to be, what was it? At that point in time, it was Beach Street, I believe. It was the movie at the time.
Beach Street, and there was another one, Crush Groove, yes.
You know what I mean? So that it was that whole genre, that whole area, and I couldn't be a part of that. You know, I remember, you know, growing up and, you know, and you had the block party, and you had the street jams, and you had the, you know, with the DJs, because obviously diving, going off sector a little bit, you're talking about the DJs and the rappers. It was more important. It was more of the DJs than not necessarily rappers, because we used to come in and you used to play music and you used to be in the park and everybody would be dancing. Again, the reason why that was important is because I didn't have the tracksuit. I didn't have the sneakers. I want to fit in. I want to be going to those places. I can't. My oldest brother, he had those things. My oldest brother, love him to death. My oldest brother was a hustler. He figured it out. He was, you know, my oldest brother, you know, he could dance. He was all that. He could play basketball. It was it for him. And, you know, it was just like, he was a lot older. He was a couple of years older than me, but it was just like, I couldn't be him. I wanted to be, but I couldn't be him. And he had already a head start on me and lots of things, and in particular, just because he's older than me. So I shouldn't say he had a head start. He was just older than me. So when I finally see all my friends and I see them with this, I'm like, I acted up the courage. How did I get them? And it was like, play basketball. And he's like, everybody on a basketball team. And I was like, basketball? And it's like, yeah. And it was a thing where I never really played, never really got into it, because there was no real avenue for me to get into it. I couldn't get into it at school, couldn't get into it at a neighborhood. I couldn't get into it because there was nothing there. No, I wasn't around any neighborhood long enough. I wasn't in any school long enough. I couldn't necessarily join a team. So, you know, when we finally got there, into the projects of where we live, at where I call home now in New York, it was a case that, you know, there was a community center. And in that community center is where everybody in our projects used to go play basketball, and that where everybody joined the team at. And we've been there for a couple of years now, about, you know, 4 years throughout high school. And I never went into the building because I didn't know where the hangout was. I didn't know, you know, what the thing to do. I just didn't know. My brother knew, but I didn't know. And he would go, because also he had wanted a little bit of separation from me, because I'm his younger brother. I can't be doing the things that he's doing. And then equally, he had to always protect me. And at that point in time, I could be a burden to him, not as in his brother, but, you know, if he's out and trouble should happen or whatever, He got to come back, and he had to take care of me. So my brother always protected me and shielded me, and I was not always allowed to go where he was going or do the things that he was doing. And it wasn't the fact that I wasn't allowed, it's just like he made sure of it. So when he turned the corner, it's like I didn't see my brother for a day, 2 days, or whatever. I saw him there. And then anytime I had any problems or in trouble, all I had to do was say something to him, and then there was no problems. And it got to the point where I was scared to tell him that I had a problem. Because if I told him that there was a problem, whoever I told him that there was a problem for, it wouldn't be a problem no more. So it got to the point where I realized that, and it got to the point where I was like, if I did get across a problem, I can't tell my brother, because my brother is going to take care of the problem, that I would feel bad if that was it. And I'm not talking in circles. My brother would beat somebody down, period. You know, if they mess with it, you know what I mean? And it was just, you know, ain't no rules when it comes to fighting. And basically it was like he had to beat somebody down to let them know, if you mess with me, this is what was going to happen. So as all that's going down and I'm speaking to the guys and around my neighborhood, and they turn around and they saying that they had the join the team, and they got the trainers, the sneakers and the tracksuit, and all you gotta do is a basketball team or whatever. I was like, okay, I'm all in, let's go. They said, yeah, practices on every Wednesday, you're gonna have to make the team. So on the Wednesday I went, and I realized it was like the whole neighborhood was there, because there was the unlimited. There was the under 20s, the under 18s, the under 16s, the under 14s. We used to call them the seniors, the juniors, the midgets, and the biddies. And it was just like everybody was there, and everybody was like playing on it, working out for the team and trying out for the team. And it was just like, I just remember walking in the gym, and it was just everything just like, this is it. This is where I belong. It's like it had music playing, you know, had crowd. It had that, you know, that little funk that the gym has, you know, that little, that sweat funk or whatever, you know, with exuberance and people working hard, and, you know, you get status there, and, you know, some players are really, really good and, you know, respected and talked about, and everybody, it was just an environment that I've never seen before. I've never witnessed. And it was just like, wow. And then you quickly noticed who was good and who was bad, not necessarily from what they were doing on the court, but just from the sneakers that they had on. And, you know, if they had on their shirts, because at that point in time, you didn't do jerseys, you did shirts and skins.
Yeah. You know, it's funny listening to you paint this picture for us, because here on 21, we've had two previous guests that come from New York. So these names that you're mentioning, like, we've heard these names before, and the story seems to be the same. Like, there's a common denominator when it comes from growing up in New York, that basketball is a culture there, and you get called into it, you get sucked into it, and you just fall into it. So it's just amazing to hear you describe that after listening to our two previous guests who, similar to you, they didn't really grow up playing basketball. They just kind of fell into it because that's the culture there in New York.
Yeah, and I would even turn around and sometimes I say culture is almost an understatement. That's it. It's just the life. It was like, it gives life. It gives, you know, identity. It helps identification. It gives you an identity, and then it helps you to identify other things and others. It gives you a sense of purpose, because now all of a sudden you want to go to school because you got to make the school team, because you want to play on the school team. You don't want to, I didn't go to school. I went to school. I did, but I didn't take it serious until I made the basketball team. And then when I made the basketball team, you know, you want to keep your grades, or you want to play or whatever. So it was just that. So as I go into the gym, and now all of a sudden, you know, they're trying to say, can you play? Can I play? And I couldn't play. I was garbage. You know, I was, you know, and I remember I then go to now find this community center, and then the next step, Claremont Neighborhood Community Center on 169th and Washington, right there on the corner. Call it the 9. That's the spot. So shout out to everybody from the 9. So then I go from there, and then I go across the street from where I live at to the junior high school gym, which school that I went to was 148 Charles Drew. Now, this is the school I went to. And at nighttime, they had the evening center. So I went there, and they're playing ball there. So now the older dudes are playing ball. So the younger dudes are playing ball here. The older dudes are playing ball. And it's almost like, okay, when you average, you play here. But when you good, you play here. And then only the great ones can go play here. And when I went there, I went and I played. I tried to go on the court and I couldn't get in. So they said they was playing at 148. And then I remember 148. And I remember seeing my brother in there, and he wasn't at the other gym. And I'll never forget. He was playing and he was going back on defense. He was running back on defense, and someone shot the ball, right? And my brother jumped up, like they was going for later. My brother jumped up, right? And he blocked it, but he blocked it with this. He was left-handed. He blocked it with this hand, with his left hand. and he put this hand up, his right hand, to stop him from hitting his head on the rim. And he snagged it out of the air, and he hung on the rim and let, and the gem went, wow. And I was like, I can't believe that's my brother. And at that point in time, I knew no matter what I did, I had to become good enough to be my brother. Because if I can't do that, everybody's going to be expecting me to do that. So fast forwarding it a little bit, I got into it for a pair of sneakers. If you get on the basketball team, you can get sneakers, you can get tracksuit, you get money, meal money, you get to travel, you know, you get to play all the other neighborhoods, all the other centers, you get to, you know, see New York, you get to travel out of state, you know, it's just a whole new, and then all of a sudden, you're trying to climb that ladder. So I wasn't nowhere near that ladder. So what I did was I started playing basketball every day. Like anybody who I can play against and wherever. And because I started playing so late, I didn't necessarily have the necessary skill. No one taught me how to shoot. Didn't have anybody work with my footwork. I ain't have nobody teach me how to dribble. I ain't have no friends to compete against, you know, this, that, and the other. So what I did was I started playing. And when I started playing, nobody wanted to play me because I was, as we said back in the day, I was garbage. Trash.
Weak sauce.
It was just no fun. And we used to play, as you will know this, Drew, we used to play New York rules. We used to play the 32. New York rules means there is no take back. You know, make it, take it. All lines are out, you know, and you call your own fouls. And that's it. And it's just basically the survival.
I thought it was no blood, no foul.
And you know, it was survival of the fittest.
Right.
And then people, if you call some bull, you know, a bull foul or whatever, it'll be challenging, and you wouldn't get the ball. So anyway, I was playing every day. I would find somebody I can play, and then it got to the point where, you know, after a year, 2 years, I was playing. When I say I played every day, I literally played every day, and I would play anybody that would be playing me. And I would play. I played this dude by the name of Virgil, and I owe Virgil a lot. Virgil played me every day. He had this jump shot. He was one of the older kids. He was big. He never ran up and down. He only played in a half court. He was a half court specialist. No one liked playing with him because he could shoot, but he would never play running up and down. And I played him every day for something, and he would destroy. And the rules are, we play in the 32. It's make it, take it. Every basket is worth 2 points, no matter what. And if the score is 16-0, you lose. Automatic, you get shut out. And I'll tell you, the first 3-4 months, he just used to shut me out. And my whole goal was just to score 2 points. Like, how can I just score 2 points? If I can't dribble now, I couldn't dribble before. So it was just like, it was like an education. And the reason why I say that is because it wasn't an education in skill set. It was an education in how can I win? What do I need to do in order to win? And after him beating me for so long, I realized that I cannot beat him at his game. I can't just turn up and all of a sudden be a shooter. And I can't all of a sudden just turn up and, you know, be this ball handler. I have to make him uncomfortable. So then that's when I started realizing about the defense of it. That's when I started realizing that he's slow. You know, if he missed and this make it, take it, I can get the rebound faster than all I have to do is make him miss. Then I don't have to worry about shooting a jump shot. I don't have to worry about dribbling. All I have to do is get the rebound, make him miss, make him shoot a jump shot. You know, and then, or if I can steal a basketball from or deflect it, then when you shoot it, it falls short, and then I can rebound and I can take it back up. So it involved me letting him get the ball because he's going to actually help me. Now, once I figured that out, then all of a sudden it was 16-4. It was 16-6, you know, and then all of a sudden we would have to finish go all the way up to 32. Then it was 32-8, 32-10, 32, you know, 12, 32-30. And I mean, literally, it was that. And then along the way of me playing, I started going to the neighborhoods and I started playing with the kiddies because I looked older. And then also I had athletic ability because I lived on the 19th floor. And in the projects, living on the 19th floor, the elevators wasn't working. So I was constantly going up and down the stairs. You know, we didn't have a water.
That was your Stairmaster then.
Yeah, there you go. You know what I mean? And, you know, when we had to do laundry, you know, when we had to go to the laundromat, you know, that was all day on Sunday. When moms went shopping, you know, if the elevator was working, we going downstairs, you making 2 and 3 trips going up and downstairs just to go outside, you know. So all of a sudden, now I'm getting this, I realized that I can outwork him. And then eventually, I was able to go neck and neck, and then I was able to beat him. I beat him once, and I remember the first time I beat him, right? He said it was luck, and I thought it was. And then he really started beating me, right? He started having no mercy. And then I started to realize he tired. And I couldn't believe the fact that he was tired. And I couldn't believe the fact that, and like I said before, I'm playing him, I'm outworking him. And then all of a sudden, I'm beating him. And then he's like, play again. I was like, sure. And then I figured it out. You can't beat me no more. And then once I figured out he couldn't beat me no more, then it came to the next one. So then I went and tried to try out for the team. And when I couldn't make the team, the coach, his name was Mike Harris, he said you wasn't good enough. So he cut me. So I went to try, and he said, no, you wasn't good enough. So he cut me from the team. And I remember going there. I remember everybody laughing. You got that because you wasn't called cut. You was called the scissors. You got the scissors.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You got them splinters for sitting on from being on that pine, you know. So obviously he cut me. And that same day when he cut me, I waited until the practice session was over. And when you get cut, you can't come back. You can't come back for the team. You can do it. So he cut me. So I waited till it was over, and I helped him put away the basketballs. I helped him, you know, clean up the gym. And I was like, well, what do I ask and what do I need to do? And he just told me to come back. He ain't saying I'm going to put you in the team. He just said, come back. So then when I came back to the next practice or whatever, I was always on the skins team, and I was always the sub, and I was always, you know, not necessarily on the team, but I was there. And while I was there, I was able to get on the court and I was able to practice with them and play with them. And then I realized the same way that I beat Virgil was the same way that I was going to get on the team. I'm going to outwork everybody here. There's not going to be nobody here that's going to be able to outwork me. And then eventually, I made it into the team. And then once I made it into the team, I got the sneakers. And then at that point in time, that was the blueprint. And the blueprint was, there's not going to be no one here that's going to outwork me, to the point where if I fast forward a little bit, everybody used to tell me, and that's Coach Mike Haz, that's his boy, you know, and he used to say, if Fab ain't come, Fab getting in the front seat, Fab come, because I was always in the team and I always did the dirty work. I was able to guard whoever, didn't necessarily care. I was going to outwork them. I was going to out-rebound them. I was going to defend them. And along the way, my offensive skills started catching up with me, especially at being 6'4", because I also thought that I was going to grow to be about 6'8". Never happened. I'm the same height now that I was when I was 13 years old. Never grew another inch. So I took off, and then all of a sudden I stopped, and everybody thought that I was going to keep going. It just never happened. But at that point in time, obviously I learned how old basketball, and I learned how to be a big man at that point in time. And then once my athletic ability started to catch up with me, right, I didn't necessarily need too much offense. My thing was, I was one of those, I'm going to go get it off the rim. If nobody would pass me the ball, I'll go get it myself. So I learned how to get the ball myself. I didn't need anybody to pass me the ball. That makes sense.
I mean, listening to your story, it's amazing to hear how the streets, the culture of New York, not only birthed you, but it groomed you, it shaped you. And then obviously it shaped you enough to where you became competitive enough to earn yourself a scholarship and you go off to Texas. You go from New York City to Panola Junior College, and then you go to McNeese State. Talk to us a little bit about what that transition was like for you, because I'm assuming, like a lot of our guests here, it's the first time they've been on an airplane, the first time that they traveled out their environment. What was that adjustment like for you going from New York to Texas?
It was probably one of the defining moments of my life. And we all have defining moments in our lives. And defining moments in your life is when, you know, something happens to you and you're not the same. Everything changes. And a defining moment is a moment when you evolve, you grow, you learn, you have an awakening. You're no longer the person that you was before. And it happens just like that. It happens just as the way all creation was made. And, you know, if I have to say it, not trying to, you know, whether you are Muslim, religion, you know, whatever faith it is that you hold, there came a day where, you know, as science said, it was bang, and that was the big bang, and it was there, you know, and for me, that was a defining moment. And after that, I couldn't go back. And when you have a defining moment, you can't go back. You can't go back to how you were. You can't go back to thinking how you just can't close it off. If I give you an example of it, it's like if you're driving someplace and you drive this way from work, and then all of a sudden you find this shortcut. And once you find that shortcut, you'll never drive that road. You'll never go the long way because now you have this shortcut. You now have this understanding. So when I had an opportunity, well, the opportunity never came to me, because at that point in time coming out of New York, I became really good really fast as a basketball player playing in high school. And as I said, the reason why I told you the story about Virgil and how I played him is because after Virgil, there were other players, and there were other players that used to beat me. And to this day, when I go back home, they'll tell me how they never realized how good I made it far, because back in the day, I was trash. They used to wax my behind, and, you know, there was nothing I can do, because Virgil wasn't the only one that, you know, used to shut me out. And then eventually, I kept a calendar. And keeping the calendar means, you know, you'll mark that calendar off. Like, something happened to me, and I'll mark that calendar, because I know my time is going to come back around. I know my opportunity is going to come back around. And when it comes back around, I'm going to be ready. That's why I put that on the calendar. And growing up playing Virgil and lots of other people, like, I knew that there was no one that could beat me no more. And I knew I was good. And I didn't play my first 2 years of high school. The first 2 years, I was playing street basketball. I was playing as Virgil. I was playing it. So when I was in high school, my high school coach's name was Bill Chapman. Bill, I went to practice. And I played, and when I played, I wanted to join the team. My high school team never seen me, never heard of me, never done. And then all of a sudden, I walk in the gym, and I'm destroying everybody. I'm really good, and I'm really young. And it's just like, you know, how did we not know? Where are you from? Why was he not playing? And I was just like, I played at my local neighborhood, and I play outside. I never played. I never knew nothing about organized ball. There was no such thing as organized basketball. I didn't understand NBA and all that. All I knew was I needed some sneakers. I needed some kicks. I needed some tracksuit. You know, we play one-on-one in the streets. We play for money. You know, that's what I'm all about. So now all of a sudden I'm realizing in high school, I'm realizing, okay, now I can get into a Division I college, and now I can do this. And, you know, I'll do that. Now I'm playing ball. I'm playing for the school team. And like, this was my junior year. And we explode. And I went to Jane Addams Vocational High School. It was a vocational school. So with it being a vocational school, they didn't specialize in like reading and writing and the, you know, the basics. You know, it was a pretty much inner city school. So I'm doing well on the basketball court and on the basketball team. And it was us being a vocational school. We didn't have, our basketball team was on probation. We didn't necessarily have a basketball team. So now all of a sudden I'm there and we have the basketball team and we're playing. We get all the way to play in Madison Square Garden. And I was a part of that.
And it was just like, okay, now all of a sudden the world opened up and now I'm like playing other high school teams and I'm hearing about all these prodigies and I'm hearing about, you know, these other players. Now, some of these players I'm hearing about, I'm destroying them on the basketball court outside. I mean, in my own neighborhood and in the street tournament. I'm like, okay, like, and I'm not necessarily destroying them with skill. I'm destroying them where I know how to beat them. I just know how to beat people. So now all of a sudden we playing high school and, you know, I'm going and now all of a sudden I'm good to the guard. We losing the championship at the Garden, first time in school history. We go on to the Garden and everything. Then the following year, it's like, okay, I want to go to college. I'm thinking I want to go to Syracuse. I want to go to St. John. And my coach get me in touch with Lou Conoseca, God bless the dead. And, you know, and Lou Conoseca, big time St. John's coach. And, you know, he invite me to come to St. John. I'm going to St. John and, you know, very first, he said, how you doing, Fab? And yeah, you can play. And first thing he asked me was, what's your pre-SAT score? I said, what? He said, your SAT score. He said, what's your GPA? I said, huh? And he's looking at me and I'm like, what is he talking about? GPA? And then he's like, look, and looking back at it now, I understand it, but back then I didn't understand what he was saying. And he was like, look, you take care of your SATs and, you know, you get a good GPA and you know, and we'll look at you. And I knew he was flogging me off. And I knew, you know, he basically told me that you have to have at least a C average and you have to pass your SAT by 700. And I'm like, I never heard of an SAT. I didn't know what he was talking about. All I knew is I was good at basketball and I want to go to this school. And I don't understand why you ain't taking me.
So Fab, in retrospect, have you had moments where you wish you would have taken high school more seriously?
In retrospect, I do wish I would have took high school more seriously, but at that point in time, you know, if I fast forward you a little bit, I didn't know. Because one of the issues that I had with high school and part of the reason why I went to a vocational school and why I am so long-winded is because I'm severely dyslexic. So, and that wasn't diagnosed until I got into college. It was diagnosed when I got into high school, but when it was diagnosed, they knew about it, but they didn't do anything about it. I didn't realize it until after I graduated, until I got to Panola Junior College. And then when I got to Panola Junior College, it was a case of me learning, taking remedial courses. So I was skilled enough as a basketball player, but I didn't have the credentials or the education. And it's also being in New York where the diversity amongst the schools in New York City, because I went to a B school. So you have a Catholic school, you have an A school, and you have a B school, a city school. And I went to a city school. I went to a city B school. Okay. And I went to a city B school because my grades were poor. And again, it wasn't necessarily me taking high school seriously. I was never in school longer than for 2 years growing up. So my diagnosis with being dyslexic and people actually having, I needed tutoring to help me. And that didn't come until I got to college.
You had me intrigued a moment ago when you said it was a defining moment moving to Texas. Was that a part of it, being diagnosed with your dyslexia and just having things different for you?
Well, the defining moment was I didn't understand anything that was happening around me. So I didn't understand that my dyslexia. I just knew that things were funny, twisted, and I couldn't see things the way everybody else could see things. And you know how the teacher tell you go up and you have to read in front of the class. I couldn't do that. So obviously I wouldn't want to go to school. I wouldn't want to go to English. You know, because I knew at some point in time I'm going to be faced with that. So I excelled in science, I excelled in business, I excelled in everything except for math and English because that was foreign. It just didn't register. So the defining moment came when I couldn't play basketball, when I realized that I had to have grades and I didn't have the grades. And I realized that no matter how good I was as a basketball player, that that was it. And I was going to end up playing street ball. And I went from playing street ball that I wanted to play ball in school. And I wanted to play ball in school because I want to go to college and I want to get into the NBA. And that's the path that you travel. And I can't travel that path because I don't have the grades. And I'm mad because no one told me. But I'm also mad that I wasn't nowhere long enough for anyone to tell me, because all the kids that I was playing against and everyone, they're going on, because I came out the year that I came out the year after Jamal Mashburn came out, after Chanel Scott came out, after Adrian Autry, Khalid Reeves, Brian Reeves. I can, at one point of the year, I was behind the year that New York City had at least 8 of the 10 McDonald's All-Americans in there. So the classes, so the New York that I grew up playing in at that point in time was almost like a mecca of basketball. So when I realized that I couldn't follow that path and I couldn't play, because here I am playing in Madison Square Garden as a junior, and not having played 2 years of high school basketball, now here I am playing as a junior in the championship in Madison Square Garden. And I struggled playing in Madison Square Garden because I never played an arena that big before in my life. And it was just
that perception.
It was like I shot air balls from the free throw line and everything. The court was just so huge. It was just so big. And not being on that stage before, it transformed me to, I have to get back here. That was the defining moment. How do I get back here? How do I get back to playing basketball? How do I get into college? How do I get to get my SAT scores up? How do I get? And it became a case of, okay, the defining moment became, how do I get there? And what got me here isn't going to be good enough to get me there. And it was like, okay, do you go to a school that's an NAIA school? Because I had all NAIA schools. I had all Division III schools. I had all Division II schools. I had all junior colleges in New York contacting me, sending me, you know, letters and invite me and telling me to come there. But there was none of the schools that I wanted. I wanted to go to D1, and I couldn't understand. And everyone kept telling me that you can't go Division I. So my whole thing was, I'm going to hold out because I don't want to go to school in New York. I want it out of New York, because nothing good comes to anyone that stays in New York. I've witnessed and I've played against. There's some players in New York City that belong, that are so skilled and can be in the NBA, but they stayed in New York. New York, you have to have it's a different mentality in New York. I don't care what anybody say, it's a different mentality from any city in the world that you have to have going out of New York. And New York is a trap, and you can get hooked. You can get hooked in those streets. And you know, I played with Cameron and Cameron, the rapper. That's who I grew up with. Cameron was to me, was a better basketball player than I played with Mace. These were all basketball players. Yes. Like, we were real true basketball players, and that's what they got into. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I've heard the stories.
Yeah, so it was like, and that's where he played. I played with Rafer Austin. I played with Ali Mo. I played, like, this is where I come from. I'm not trying to name drop in that, but that's where I come from. And that's the culture. So all of a sudden, I'm like, why I can't go? If it's like, either you go D1 or you're going to stay here. And bottom line, I'm going to start hustling and selling dope in the streets. And that didn't work for me. You know, so I'm like, that was the defining moment. You either stay here and be that, or you leave and you get out and you give yourself a chance. And I wanted a chance because I knew I didn't have it in me to be that, to be a hustler, to be in the streets, to be a gangster, to be, I can't be that. So all of a sudden, I'm trying to figure out, how do I correct this? How do I correct the fact that I don't have the education, I don't have the SAT scores, I can't read, I can't write.
And that'll conclude part one of Fab's amazing journey. Please tune in next week as Fab goes into life as a college student athlete and the lessons he's learned along the way. And until next time, keep training harder.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. To the athletes, keep being the best that you can be. Run your race with excellence. To the parents of athletes, let's continue to support our children with patience, grace, and understanding, learning to recognize how to truly become the guides and stewards that we're supposed to be. And we want to hear from you. We want to build a community. Give us your feedback about this episode. And if you have a story you want to share, Drew and I would love to feature you on an upcoming episode of 21.
For more information about services provided by Train Hard at 21, visit our website at drewlasker.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. We provide resources to meet your training needs. Just get in touch with us and subscribe to this podcast series wherever you get your podcasts. Until the next episode of 21, train harder.